Hello everyone, and welcome to another eShop interview here on Nintendo World Report. My name is Dan Koopman, and I am here with Brian.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thank you. Bit of a ramshackle start. We had to cover out some things, but now we're kicking in, and we're kicking live here with an interview. Could you kick things off by talking a bit about yourself?
Well, sure, I can do that. So, I'm Brian Sigurgesson, and I run Image and Form. It's a game dev studio in Gothenburg, Sweden. Mm-hmm. And there's 11 of us now. It's actually the biggest we've ever been. As all studios, I think you run an amoeba kind of lifestyle. You grow and then you shrink a little bit and then you grow again. And right now we're on the rise, so we just want to ride the wave. We've been in business since 1997, but we haven't gone into game development only until 2004. And that's when we got started doing a lot of Mac and PC games, play and learn games for kids. Mm-hmm. And then after that, in around 2009 or so, we decided to move into iOS development, and we made a couple of questionable games for iOS, and then we made a really great game for iOS called Ant Hill. Ant Hill was a major success for us, both critically and economically. Mm-hmm. And now we are doing a game for the Nintendo 3DS instead. So it's quite a leap for us. But I'm sure you'll ask me about that later.
Of course I will. For you have also made, your company has also made, like, in the same series, like a DSiWare title, because the SteamWorld thing didn't came just pulled out of a hat. It started as a title called, I believe, SteamWorld Tower Defense, which was released roughly 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. We released SteamWorld Tower Defense just because at that point in 2010 when we released that game.
Yeah.
We were just leaving a very comfortable sort of work for hire production studio phase, where we had done all these kids games, and we had tried and failed with a few early iOS games, and then we got a very talented programmer on board who had done Nintendo DS games before, and we wanted to check out the DSiWare store. And so we made this tower defense game with a twist where it's humans versus robots, but mm-hmm. but the twist is that you play the nice and friendly robots against the greedy, sort of depraved looking humans. And so that was the it actually caught a little bit of attention, but we were very much rookies at the time when it comes to PR and marketing.
Yes.
Because we had had such a comfortable ride up until then. And so we did a bare minimum of PR. We sent out for reviews to, I think, 3 or 4 places. And amazingly, the game paid for itself.
Yeah.
And it was a huge surprise to us because we realized that the DSiWare store was a quite horrible marketplace. It was really hard to find games, and but people found it and it paid for itself. And so
That IGN did a review of it. I mean, currently the maker of that review, Lucas M. Thomas, is my boss at like Nintendo Force magazine, and he worked like all that DSiWare stuff back in the day, and It's what my soul me back in the day on most of that DSiWare games as well. So, in that fashion, that was kind of the amazing point for you guys that IGN saw that game and thought, let's publish a review, and everybody saw it.
Yeah, I don't know if you've been talking to Lucas about these last few days, but we actually got an email from Lucas, and I had to write back immediately and say, thanks. If it weren't for you, I mean, we wouldn't have made SteamWorld Dig, which we're putting out now, because if he hadn't published that review, that game wouldn't have, we would have lost money making it, and we probably would just have scrapped the idea of going
Yeah.
with Nintendo. So, Lucas Thomas, wherever you are, we love you to bits.
I will send him a mail with this interview, possibly, like 2 days later.
Okay.
What made you then? What made you so look back on that game so fondly and made you go back to that universe? Because it has been a gap between those two games, of course.
Oh, it has. It's for us, it's been so we made that game in 2010, and then when we had finished that game, we got a grant for making Antil for iOS, and that sort of put us in a difficult spot because we had gotten money to develop it. So we thought that, okay, we have to develop that game, and so we made Antil, and very soon it turned out to be a sort of a hit gameplay, and so we developed that, and that was a success. After Antil, we went back to do a little bit of work for hire because we tried out some prototypes for other iOS games that we had lying around, or ideas that we had lying around, and the prototypes weren't that satisfying, and so we were thinking, okay, isn't it time then to revisit SteamWorld and to expand on that story? Because in the beginning, when we made SteamWorld, we thought, yeah, that's a nice twist. But towards the end of making SteamWorld Tower Defense, we thought, how did this world come about? Why is it the way it is? What is the background story? And we sort of thought, okay, what must have happened for this world to exist the way it is? Why are the humans the lowlives, and why are the robots the friendly guys? It's always the other way around.
I think even in the PR you called it hobos, I believe.
Yeah. Well, it's rude, and I apologize to all hobos out there, okay? But the thing that we thought up was that, what if Charles Babbage, the inventor and scientist in the 19th century, I mean in 18 something, he was working on a mechanical computer, and he succeeded to a certain extent. But what if he had succeeded all the way in making a computer 100 years before the actual first computers were made? With and at that How would he have done it at that time? Well, obviously he would have to do something steam driven. You didn't have electricity. And if he had managed making mechanical computers that way, well, the step going from there to making robots is not that huge. Okay, so he managed to make robots that do all the menial tasks. What will happen to the world? Okay, our idea was that humanity would be lazy and depraved, and also the robots would happily go about doing all the things that they were programmed for. But there would be one more thing that these guys in the 19th century wouldn't have foreseen, and that's weapons technology would have accelerated much, much faster. If you would have mechanical computers, the accuracy of all your cannons and so on would have gone up amazingly. And that means that you could have full-scale world wars at that point in time. And that, in SteamWorld, that is exactly what has happened. Everybody copies everybody else's technology, and then you have bigger wars than you're really prepared to have. And you have bad communications, so you can't really negotiate over the phone, and so humanity blows itself to bits, more or less. And the parts that are untouched after a big war like this, is exactly hobo land where nobody was. So a few hobos that have no intention of running the world, they're still around.
Yes. But
the robots who are doing all the menial tasks, they're actually the ones who are getting the day-to-day business done.
Yeah. So now that you are back to that franchise and you are releasing to the world SteamWorld Dig, So the war against the humans is now over and you're now trying to explore mines for yourself. In a few words, how can you describe like the game the best?
I'd say it's a game with, it's a story-driven mining platformer. So it's a story-driven mining platform adventure is what we call it. It's what you do in the game is you mine.
Yes.
Most of the game takes place inside a mine, and it's a 2D game, so you see it from the side. It's like someone just cut a slice, and you're looking at what Rusty, the main character, is doing underground.
Yes.
So that's what you do. You mine. You bring up the loot to the surface, and you sell it to the shops, and you get money to buy upgrades. Better pickaxes, other tools, so you can go further down. And we also call it a platform game because the controls in the game are very much that of a platform game. So you use any console would lend itself perfectly to SteamWorld Dig. It has really neat platform controls. But it's also an adventure. It starts out at one distinct point, and it ends at a distinct point many hours later.
Yes.
And in between there, you have an escalating storyline. In the beginning, the game is soft-paced and friendly, and you start out, and then you find more and more disturbing things underground until the climactic showdown at the end. So it's, in that sense, it's a classic game.
Yes,
it is finite. You have a beginning, you have an end, and hopefully there's a lot of juicy stuff in the middle.
That's always important. Towards the beginning, towards the end, always a goal to go through. Talking about goals, then your main objective is mine, sell, and see the town of, like, I think it's called Tumbleton.
Yep.
Yeah, Tumbleton, like, go to bigger glory. Like, how will the game progress, and how will you keep it fresh, like, through its running time?
Well, the thing is that we were concerned in the beginning of two things, or it's mainly balancing things, but it made us change the gameplay as well. It was how do we make sure that people don't get bored in playing it, because mining is, in essence, it's grinding. You go down, you pick up loot, you go to the surface, you sell it, you get better stuff, you go down again and mine and so on. How do you prevent that from getting boring? And on the other end of that spectrum, how do you prevent people from getting through the game too quickly? I mean, that sounds harsh, but how do you keep people occupy the whole time?
Yeah,
and so it's, the game is it's mission driven that way. So you're told from the beginning by the friendly people in Tumbleton up on the surface what you're supposed to do at first, and then you sort of find your way down there, and then these hints get fewer and more far between, and you sort of have to figure out for yourself what to do and where to go.
Yeah.
And there's a multitude of caves in the game that you go to pick up serious upgrades and so on.
Yes.
And there are really no clues of how you're going to puzzle your way through those caves. Some are very simple, and some are a bitch. Yep.
Well, that's a perfect way of describing it, I guess. So what I found in the game, because I played it a bit for the people not in the know, because we haven't mentioned it since the beginning, I'm sorry. The game seems quite focused on your resources. So I played through some elements of it, and I found that I had to keep a lot of things in check. So will you be able to upgrade all your equipment in due course, or are there still like some restrictions to it later on?
It's all your equipment is upgradable. So all the things that you carry with you, and it's from the beginning, it's not very much. I mean, you go down there with a pretty blunt pickaxe and a very small knapsack on your back, and it fills up very quickly. And then one of the other elements in the game is lighting. When you go down underground, since you're a steam-driven robot, the light will dwindle as your coal dwindles. You use it up. So SteamWorld Dig has that if you play the game and somebody calls you on the phone and you take that call and while away a few minutes, then when you return to the game, it's actually, if you're underground, it's actually quite dark, and you won't be able to see the resources around you, and you sort of have to guess your way up again. And when you get to the surface, you get light. So all of the resources in the game can be upgraded. And it's, I would, for myself, the when I've played through it, I've played through in a dozen of different ways. I've tried collecting everything and just find as much as possible. And I've also tried to just speed run down, basically just trying to drill a vertical shaft to go
Did that
down
go
as quick.
well?
No, well, it's you have to sort of pace yourself because, well, for one thing, you can't really do that because your equipment won't beat the tougher soil. The soil gets tougher as you
Yes,
go down.
yeah.
But it also, I mean, I've found that once you've played it fully once, where you've explored everything and you found all the caves and all the orbs that you want to collect and so on, then
Yeah.
you at the second time, I bet you want to try to see how fast you can get down, and also how skillfully you can play, meaning not only how fast you can go, but also how can you keep your number of deaths to a minimum, and so on. It's so it's there are quite a few ways to play this game,
Yeah.
and I think it has pretty excellent replayability value.
We'll get to that a little later. But just because our main character is more friendly, it doesn't mean that the adventure could severely damage in a way, and we talked about deaths already a little bit. What are some of like the obstacles that Rusty will encounter on his trip, and are there like large punishments for not being careful?
Oh, there are some pretty evil punishments. Yes. Well, for one, I don't know how much I should spoil, but there are, let's call them just different types of enemies.
Yeah.
And there's quite a number of those, but then there's also environmental hazards.
Yep.
As you go down, you will run into a lot of nastiness if you're not careful. There just lots of things with the ground that will try to screw you over. For example, you have spike traps. For some reason, there are spike traps in the underground, and then you have layers of acidic earth, which is very tricky to get past.
Yeah, I mean, in the early stages, I came across those spike traps, and I quickly found my first upgrade, which were like I think the running shoes, or the ability to run, and those were pretty help because those blocks like disappear in an instant. So it becomes like you already get an idea of the dangers you are ahead of you pretty quick.
Right, and it's also it's always a balance issue in games, but here it's been that we want you to find the upgrade that you need to sort of get past the next point. And it's chances are that you will find the upgrades. It gets trickier and trickier to get to them as you progress through the game. But yeah, it's a balance issue. Get the upgrade, and it will sort of help you through the next phase.
Yes.
And that way, that also keeps the player occupied for a good while. I think it's very easy for the hours to zip by when you play this game.
So Rusty will not only be exploring like the same desk as environments you see in the beginning, correct?
No, it's a multi-world setup. So you sort of run through different obstacles as you go along, and also different as the worlds change, and it's thematic in that way. You go through different thematic worlds on your way down, and then you sort of have to learn to deal with different types of obstacles and enemies. And it also it becomes, in SteamWorld Dig, the terrain itself gets tricky, because you think, okay, I'm supposed to dig this. How hard can it be?
Yes.
But then after a while, digging in itself becomes treacherous. And towards the end, you sort of have to be careful which paths you choose and so on.
It becomes a risk reward game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it.
So what is an interesting itch about like SteamWorld Dig is that the areas in the game are randomly generated. What made you decide for such a decision, and how do you feel like it impacts like replayability of the title?
Well, I'd say it affects replayability in a good sense, because you're not going to run directly for the caves and find them exactly in the spot where you expected to find them, mm-hmm. or where they were last time.
Yeah,
but it's a mix too. I mean, the minerals and so on that you're picking up are randomly placed, and the locations of the caves and so on, that's randomly placed. But all the caves are handmade, because they have to be so that you can actually solve them. As a regular platform game, how am I going to get from A to B? If that was all randomized, it would sort of steal away from the competition of the game. I mean, you could play a very easy game that way, and a friend would have maybe an impossible game.
Yeah, it always must be a fair trade in that opinion.
Yeah.
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 So, like, what another interesting thing what really like appealed to me was like the presentation of the title. So something I was particularly impressed with the usage of like sprite art in combination of the 3D effects. What made you like decide for this specific route?
Well, it's for us. It's pretty. It was a simple decision. We have an extraordinary art director in our office, and he is also the main producer of the graphic material. Mm-hmm. The graphic style of games is always his decision,
yes.
Finally. And it would be interesting if you somehow could in conjunction with this interview, if you could show the differences between Ant Hill and SteamWorld Dig, because they are very, very different types of games graphically.
Yeah.
But you can sort of see a thread there that we're always working with 2D graphics in our games, and it's hellish because there is so much work. The process to draw it and to animate it and to make it look good it takes forever, but it's really worth it, because the presentation of image and form games is key. We're never going to step away from that. We always want to make lovely looking games.
And sprite art, in my opinion, also makes it more timeless.
Yeah. Yes, it does. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting point. You could look at a 3D game that was made only 3 or 4 years ago, and you would definitely feel that it's dated already.
So, like, were your biggest challenges like developing for the 3DS? Because you have worked on the DSi before. and on iOS, but what makes so inherently different to you?
I'd say that working on the 3DS, sounds like I'm heaping a lot of praise over my team, but I really think that they're a spectacular team. From the beginning with the 3DS, we had no hurdles that couldn't be overcome, and a great understanding really from the beginning. So we have some excellent programmers along with our excellent artists.
Yeah.
So that wasn't such a great hurdle in itself, not working with the 3DS. What was a very big hurdle for us was finding the fun factor in the game. Getting we prototyped the game and we thought, yeah, this would be fun. And then a month or so later, we were almost panicking because, God damn, it's not fun. Where's the fun in this game? And then we just decided to step back a little bit. And it's like, okay, we need to find the fun factor here. We cannot go on just hoping that we'll find it. We must find it now.
Yeah.
And so I'd say that was the single most difficult thing in with SteamWorld Dig. It was finding the fun factor. And thank God we found it. We had decided on sort of a gameplay where you always had to think about how you dug your way because you wouldn't be able to jump up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things adding to the fun factor that we decided to, okay, set people free in this game. Let them dig any way they want. And wall jumping will take you up no matter how vertical you've been
yeah.
digging.
That's the one thing I like about the game. It can still be punishing at times, but having that wall jump on you makes that you always can progress in some fashion.
Yeah.
It does never stop.
Right, exactly. And if you get stuck, chances are that you actually get stuck in one spot, then we have this self-destruct option. You can actually self-destruct and lose half of your loot. Maybe you've been playing it so excellently that you haven't gotten into that situation, but you can actually end up in a pit or something where you've run out of steam. You won't be able to take yourself from that position. And then you can actually opt to self-destruct and sort of reemerge at the surface, but with half of your loot, half of your money gone, actually. Because it costs a bit to put you... Once you self-destruct, it costs the repair shop a little bit to put you together again. But I'd say that developing for the 3DS, it was a challenge with the 3D and putting together the assets afterwards. That was a challenge, making the 3D videos and so on, because we had never done anything like that before. But again, I mean, the team read up on it and just magically put it together. I wish I could tell you how it was done, but I can't.
it's at least something to be proud of, I guess. So beyond like SteamWorld Dig, are there like plans to do more with the SteamWorld series or support Nintendo systems more in the future, or is it or am I speaking way beyond like this type of speaking terms, because I'm sorry if I do that.
No, don't worry about it. I'm happy to speak about that.
Yeah.
We feel that at one point when we were making SteamWorld Dig, we were giving away very, very, very much of the story behind SteamWorld Dig. Well, basically what I told you before about the background. We sort of want to put that out in pieces in coming games, in the SteamWorld series, so that you get a better and better and better understanding of what has actually happened.
Yeah,
I think there's an interesting likeness to the Terminator series, where in the first movie you don't really understand how does this work, why did it happen, or how did it start, and it's not. You're not told that in the first movie. It's actually in the second movie where they actually tell most of the background, what has really happened.
Yes.
And I like that we have a universe that we can expand on, and we will expand on it. So that's one thing, expanding on the story. Another one is expanding on different types of games in SteamWorld.
Yeah.
I got the question earlier today in another forum, if we are looking towards Minecraft and Terraria and so on, and making a sandbox game would be, it would be thrilling. It would be very interesting to make that.
Yes.
And those games, both Minecraft and Terraria, I think are fabulous things. It's beautiful creations. SteamWorld Dig is not a sandbox game, but we're not alien to the thought of making it, of sort of experimenting with it anyway. But we're also thinking of lots of other types of gameplay.
Is the sandbox one that then most appeals to you, or is there like still another idea from thing from this is where it should go?
Good, that's a good question. I think the sandbox idea is obviously, when you look at the success of Minecraft and Terraria, not only the economic success of that, but also the fun that they're bringing to all the people that are playing with it. That's a tremendous success. And by our standards here, because we want to make as high quality games as possible, I think that's a lovely achievement that you have people who love your games so much that you will actually get stuck in it. You become a Minecrafter or a Terrarian. I think that's beautiful. And so the sandbox option, that's one way to go. I think there's a lot of work to be done if we want to keep the polish of SteamWorld Dig, if we want to keep the level of graphic detail and so on, then we have a lot of work ahead of us. But
it could be a taxing project as well.
Yeah, it definitely could. But that's one way to go. I think we're now looking at, actually we're following up in the SteamWorld series with a radically different sort of gameplay, and it's a game that we hopefully can finish up in not too long, so we can have a tail on SteamWorld Dig. But it tags in pretty well with both the personnel from SteamWorld Dig and also the main idea of the robots.
Is that coming to Nintendo platforms, or is that still up in the air?
Well, it's up in the air because we just started on it. I must say that we're very happy with Nintendo overall, and so we have no reason to leave the Nintendo 3DS platform. But if SteamWorld Dig becomes successful in the way we hope it will be, then one other way to go is also to, or another path to that can run in parallel, is porting SteamWorld Dig to other consoles, because it's a perfect console game.
Yeah.
So it could go to PlayStation or Xbox or even the Wii U.
I can see it working, because the similar experience is there with all the information on the bottom screen and then playing it on the TV.
Yeah, exactly. That's very observant of you. And then, obviously, also we want to see if it can get put on PC. I think it'd be very playable there.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of depends on the reception here on Nintendo 3DS. If it works well, then we have something to take to that other company that starts with S on PC.
Which is an important player, of course. You can never deny the company with starting with the S.
Nope, exactly.
I think we're coming to the kind of to a close of the interview, but I want lastly, I do this with every single interview I do, is I want to give you the chance to give like a final pitch for your game in roughly like a minute. So why should people like be excited for SteamWorld Dig? And you can start whenever you like.
I think people should get SteamWorld Dig because it's a very fresh addition to the Nintendo 3DS. and also to the eShop. It's a fabulously presented game, and the gameplay is very captivating. We call it a mining platform adventure game, and it means in the game you mine and collect resources. You jump around as you would in a platformer and dig your way down. And this is accompanied by a storyline that is compelling and also escalates to a climactic end. So you have a classic game, but in a very fresh setting and with very fresh twists to it.
That's very respectable. You did it in 45 seconds.
All right.
Yeah. You can still say, buy the game.
Buy the game!
There you go.
Well,
It has been very exciting. I've been playing it for a little bit, and it seems very promising so far. I want to save like my thoughts for like a review or for like another time, but no, I've been enjoying it so far. So thank you so much for letting me play it.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. And I think that's it for today. So I want to thank you, Brian, for being my guest and coming on this podcast and talking about all the stuff related to SteamWorld and the stuff that's ahead.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.